Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I cut through the BS and lay out what the gaslighting clowns pulled out of their hats this week and what is coming next. If you're still waiting for that transitory inflation to end, it could be a while. Fresh CPI numbers just came out, and they were hot once again. As Bloomberg puts it, quote, obviously, this is very bad news for Joe Biden, since we are starting to get into election territory. First numbers, March CPI was a 4.6% annualized, while core CPI, which excludes food and gas, came in at 4.4 annualized. The Fed's latest darling statistic, so-called super core CPI, which takes housing out of core, turned in a horrifying 8% annualized. This marks the fifth month of rising inflation, starting back in those sweet days of October, back when CPI was just 0.9 annualized, a simpler time. After which they flipped to marching up month after bitter month, even as the Fed bragged about its progress. This latest number was important because it probably closed the Fed's last hope for a rate cut this year, since at some point they can't cut anymore because it would be blatant election interference, so obvious even the Fed wouldn't dare, at least it never has. In fact, Fed guru Larry Summers thinks the Fed's next move could be rate hikes, so soft landing canceled. On the ground, that means 7% mortgages and 24% credit card rates are here to stay, along with a frozen housing market and millennials splitting ramen with roommates instead of getting married. The big guys on Wall Street still have plenty of money, of course. Do not worry about them. They've salted it away at 3% during the pandemic, or they're still tapping the trillions of cash sloshing around because Wall Street is paid by the Fed to park it there. As for the broader economy, higher rates means more bleeding out, as the productive economy and native workers continue being gutted, leaving deficit spending and illegals to carry the headline spending and the headline jobs numbers that keep the illusion going, even as the real economy transforms to government spending, government workers, and government welfare checks. As for the rest of the world, a Fed locked into high rates puts pressure on every country in the world, since higher U.S. rates drains potentially trillions out of their local confetti and into the U.S. Indeed, within minutes of this CPI number, the yen plunged to nearly 153, the euro lost a full penny, and China certainly dusting off the devaluation playbook, given it will be their last chance if Trump wins. Now, if China does devalue, it puts Chinese dumping on turbo, targeting what's left of American manufacturing. So what's next? At the beginning of the year, just 4 short months ago, traders on Wall Street were predicting up to 7 rate cuts this year in a glorious pirouette of that fabled soft landing. Instead, we are now staring down the barrel of no rate cuts at all. In fact, we've even got rate hikes on the table. And the reason is simple. The Fed did not fix inflation. They didn't make a dent. Federal spending continued. In fact, it accelerated. Essentially, the Fed took supply chain unwinds and post-lockdown reopening as a magic bullet, the easy out, and they abandoned the field, hoping for the best. So far, this has played out exactly how it did last time. The Fed abandoned the job when oil fell in the 70s. They got a second wind for inflation that, last time anyway, turned out to be almost impossible to kill. The Biden jobs miracle keeps grinding away with a, quote, stellar March jobs report logging nearly 300,000 new jobs that blew away even the most meth-pumped analysts on Wall Street. And it makes the third month in a row of improbably tremendous job beats. Just one problem, it was all part-time jobs. Full-time jobs actually fell by 6,000, continuing a trend over the past year where full-time workers have collapsed by almost 1.5 million, replaced by nearly 2 million part-time workers, put them together and presto, job growth. Sadly, what real jobs are left apparently did not even go to native-born Americans. In fact, they lost precisely 651,000 jobs last month, bringing the three-month tally to nearly 1.5 million jobs lost by the native-born in 3 months. In fact, there's been literally zero job growth for native-born workers since 2018. All the jobs have gone to the foreign-born population, of which, according to the Center for Immigration Statistics, roughly half actually went to the 9 million illegals. To give a sense of the scale, over 1 in 3 U.S.-born men with a high school degree are not working. Things are fine, of course, for those with a bachelor's degree. 90% of them have a job and no doubt cheap nannies and lawn care. Keep in mind this is all best case, because I've mentioned in recent videos the epic statistical divergence between official payroll numbers sampled from companies and the household numbers which actually ask people if they have a job. The gap between the two currently stands at a daunting 9 million phantom jobs. Maybe they exist, maybe they don't. The BLS just extrapolates they don't actually work here. Now, I mentioned in recent videos that the most amazing thing about the grim jobs picture is that this is happening even with $2 trillion deficits. That should, in theory, at least be buying some jobs. After all, spend that much money and somebody gets paid. In other words, we can only imagine what's under the hood once you peel off the trillions pouring out of Washington. So what's next? Given both the border and Washington's checkbook are wide open, expect yet more millions of migrants to boost the jobs numbers while holding down wage gains for natives who do still have a job. Just a few weeks ago, Jerome Powell actually bragged about this on 60 Minutes, crediting the open border for holding down blue-collar wages, which he likes because it does the inflation dirty work for him. Of course, at the expense of those blue-collar workers, or former workers, buying groceries on layaway while Paul Krugman lectures them about the Bidenomics miracle. Do not expect much relief, at least until the election, and even then it will be trench warfare against a uniparty that is addicted to the government spending, the regulatory jihad on small business, and the cheap imported labor that keeps jobs and wages under control. I'm a big fan of saving Bitcoin for the long term, and the Unchained Bitcoin IRA is a great way to do that. You get the tax advantages, and if it's a Roth IRA, you're not going to pay capital gains so long as you HODL. Most Bitcoin IRAs make you give up control, which can expose you to exchange hacks or even re-lend it out like banks do. With Unchained, you control the keys to your Bitcoin, which means you always know it's there. They also provide one-on-one concierge service to walk you through it and answer any questions. Why pay more taxes than you need to? Set it up today at Unchained.com. Use promo code Peter to get $100 off a Bitcoin IRA. The government bureaucrats who actually run America, the deep state, leaked a couple of its tricks this week, thanks to some plucky reporting by James O'Keefe, formerly of Project Veritas, along with the separate leak of a star-studded list of so-called super users who get privileged and non-public economic statistics directly from the BLS. If you remember the 1980s Eddie Murphy movie Trading Spaces, you'll know that getting official statistics ahead of time is essentially a license to print money, and it turns out a bevy of 50 Wall Street firms have been getting insider emails directly from the BLS, including a private explanation of a new CPI method that implied higher inflation for longer, which implies higher Fed rates for longer, which is rather explosive in terms of insider information. It blows Eddie Murphy's orange juice futures out of the ballpark. So why might a BLS employee do such a thing? Because there is a time-honored tradition in regulation to get a sweetheart job offer after you leave government, the golden parachute. So the fox guards the hen house for a couple years, then the other foxes set him up with a Porsche and a beach house in the Hamptons. Nice work if you can get it. The second deep state derp is even worse, a freelance investigative reporter's hidden camera date with a senior economist at the Fed. Over drinks, the PhD shared how the entire Fed, including Jerome Powell, sees it as their life's mission to stop Donald Trump, both while he was in office and to stop him coming back. The economist regales with relish how Jerome Powell raised rates immediately after Trump won, and kept them high to spite the Don. He also, again with relish, shared how he doesn't know a single conservative at the Fed. I mean, they might exist, but I haven't heard of any. This matters because the Federal Reserve is the unelected bureaucracy who runs our entire economy, with almost zero public oversight and almost zero voter input. If the Fed doesn't want it to happen, it won't happen. They finance the trillion-dollar deficits, they cut the rates when Joe Biden needs it, and they apparently hike the rates when it's time to put Trump in his place. This, of course, is not how the Fed is supposed to work. It's supposed to be a Jedi council of big brain nerds who retire to their mountaintop lair to reflect upon the inner truths of the monetary system insulated from the vulgar world of politics. Instead, it turns out they're a bunch of frat boys taping the desk drawer shut so Trump's jobs numbers look bad. So what's next? None of these bureaucrats will be disciplined, and none of their organizations will be reformed, because the deep state protects its own, and it quite likes the racket it's got going. The solution is simple. Try and find the constitutional justification for an economic Jedi Council, or for that matter, a Bureau of Labor Statistics. It is not there, because under the Constitution, none of these people should be collecting a taxpayer salary. The government is not supposed to run the economy, and when it does a crap job. The swamp is alive, it's very well, and it's destroying the country, but it will not change until voters make a change. In case you are dreaming of escaping the cubicle and setting up that B&B or custom motorcycle shop in Florida, there's some bad news from the National Federation of Independent Business. Small business optimism just hit an 11-year low. The lowest since back when Obama was failing to recover the economy from the 2008 crisis. And the reason is simple: inflation, followed by labor quality, finding skilled workers. So even as Washington takes victory laps for the inflation they pretended to end, the rest of America can see ongoing inflation, from their grocery bills to the gas pump to small businesses now struggling to get by. So every month, the Federation surveys between 500 and 2,000 small businesses, asking them about business conditions. The latest survey for March, optimism fell to the lowest reading since December of 2012. Moreover, that makes 27 consecutive months that the index has been below the 50-year average. That's over 2 years, which is odd considering Biden has allegedly been delivering stellar numbers, almost unbelievably good numbers, on both jobs and growth. Digging in, the biggest concern for small business was inflation, so rising input costs from rent to utilities to property tax and wages. Rent in particular is exploding, with small businesses expecting an average 9% increase in their rent this year. Second biggest is labor, where small businesses are paying more, but an increasing number cannot find qualified workers. So 2 out of 3 small businesses couldn't find enough decent workers. 1 out of 5 reported finding literally 0 qualified workers for open positions, because presumably those workers are relaxing on the couch collecting benefits which have soared since COVID because votes don't buy themselves. Incidentally, the survey also asked small businesses what they think will happen to overall inflation in the next year, and the median response was between 4.5% and 5% inflation. Given small business is part of that inflation, they're the ones who have to translate inputs into outputs, that might be worth penciling in. In fact, 2 out of 3 small businesses are already raising prices, which is apparently hitting sales, with most small businesses reporting lower sales despite higher prices. Note that consumer spending is officially up nearly 5% on the year, so either small business is uniquely bad at selling stuff, or government statistics are lying or adjusted. So beyond inflation and falling sales, owners reported slowing their hiring plans, turning in the lowest hiring plans since the depths of the pandemic. More concerning, on net, they're running down inventory, which doesn't really match an allegedly freewheeling consumer. So what's next? There's not much in the way of relief, with inflation marching up straight line for 6 months now. Input prices will keep going, so their costs will keep going up. While that same inflation is canceling interest rate cuts for the foreseeable future, meaning it will remain hard and it will remain expensive for small companies to borrow. As for finding workers, government benefits soared 30% or $800 billion a year since the pandemic, and will continue to lure workers out of the workforce as Democrats buy votes for November. In theory, the unfilled jobs would eventually drive up wages, so supply and demand, and lure some of those workers back on the job. In practice, with millions of illegals pouring in, many of those jobs, certainly the low-skill ones, won't actually go to Americans. Do you have an IRA, 401k, or an annuity? Pay attention. A secret war on your retirement is here that threatens your financial future. Consider the years of hard work you've invested in your nest egg, dreaming of a comfortable retirement. Now, imagine it all disappears overnight. This isn't a distant possibility. It's our current reality outlined in a new report from our show sponsor, ITM Trading. Facing collapse, the U.S. economy with soaring inflation, growing national debt, and looming bank crises threatens your retirement accounts. Think the FDIC has you covered? This free report reveals why you're more at risk than you think. We're on the cusp of an economic downturn, potentially rivaling the Great Depression, with your retirement at the forefront of the crisis. Call 866-414-1366 to get your hands on their free report, The Secret War on Your Retirement, that breaks down the current crisis and what you can do to protect your retirement. In case you've been living under a rock, gold prices have been on fire, jumping 20% in just the past 2 months. That takes gold to a near doubling in price since pre-pandemic, when it was meandering along at just $1,500. Yesterday, it closed at $2,400. So if you don't own any gold, it might make sense to get some in case it catches on. Plus, Peter Schiff can now buy nice shirts. Now, soaring price is a new experience for many gold investors, who are long accustomed to taking the slow and steady stairs while stocks take the elevator. Granted, they take it up, they take it down. But here we are with stocks flat over the past 2 months, and gold is up 20%. In fact, at this point, gold has now matched the S&P 500 throughout the pandemic. And of course, it runs circles around the US dollar, which is melting like ice cream in the sun thanks to federal spending and a very obliging Fed that has knocked a fifth off the dollar's buying power since the pandemic. So what's driving the gold rally? Three things: inflation, central bank buying, and geopolitical tensions, including Russian sanctions, with a guest appearance by some large mystery buyer rumored to be backed by the Chinese government. Taking each in turn, we're coming up on 6 months now of rising inflation as the transitory inflation narrative turns out to have been a head fake. I also mentioned recently how central banks are now openly admitting that they're preparing for some major financial catastrophe. A senior Dutch central banker said the quiet part out loud a couple months ago, and presumably the crisis they have in mind is sovereign debt and the bank collapses that tend to come along for the ride. And then, of course, the geopolitical tensions. Above all, Russia and China. Now, Russia itself is not very important. It really is Mexico with nukes, with a fairly inconsequential economy. The problem is the U.S. sanctions, particularly the effort to seize the assets of the Russian Central Bank, those have put countries around the world on notice that their dollars are not safe, that they can be seized anytime you look at Joe Biden funny. That sends those banks to the next best asset, including gold. Now, gold is a pretty small market. All the gold in the world is worth about $16 trillion, while all the government debt is worth closer to $100 trillion. So that means if money is moving out of government debt, it can move the needle a lot on gold. So what's next? At this point, Wall Street is falling over each other trying to up their gold targets. So Goldman is saying 2,700, Bank of America says 3,000 by next year, UBS is saying 4,000 in the next, quote, 2 to 3 years. That happens, we'd be looking at a near tripling of gold prices, which would be the biggest rally since the 2008 crisis. Before that, you'd have to go back to the 70s. But given inflation and sovereign debt are both getting worse and actually speeding up, and given that wars and geopolitical tensions appear to be cranking out assembly line style, these numbers may actually end up being conservative for gold prices. Fundamentally, gold is insurance, and when the world is as badly run as it is today, it's the last line of defense, and investors are finally realizing that. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode fresh in your inbox, and go to petersaintange.com to read the weekly articles with charts and all the gory details. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.